Chapter 17. There were 50 or more wagons outspanned around the perimeter of the square, but the centre was left open, and here the Braveleys' pits were burning, the flames already sinking to form glowing beds. Trestle tables stood in two lines near the fires, and the women worked at them, cutting meat and beer verse, buttering bread, arranging platoons of pickle bottles, piling the food on trays, and sweetening the evening with their voices and laughter. In a level place a huge buck sail was spread for the dancing, and at each corner a lantern hung on a pole. The band was tuning with squeaks from the fiddles and preliminary asthma from the single concertina. The men gathered in knots amongst the wagons or squatted beside the Braveleys pits, and here and there a jug pointed its base briefly at the sky. "I don't want to be difficult, Waite," Pearson came across to where Waite was standing with his captains. "But I see you've put Dennis in Gunther's troop."
"That's right."
Waite offered him the jug, and Peterson took it and wiped the neck with his sleeve.
"It's not you, Gunther," Peterson smiled at Gunther Neuhausen. "But I would be much happier if I could have Dennis in the same troop as myself. Keep an eye on him, you know."
They all looked at Waite to hear what he would say.
"None of the boys are riding with their fathers. We've purposely arranged it that way. Sorry, Dave."
"Why?"
Waite Courtney looked away, over the wagons at the furious red sunset that hung above the escarpment.
"This isn't going to be a bush buck shoot, Dave. You may find that you'll be called upon to make decisions that will be easier for you if you're not making them about your own son."
There was a murmur of agreement, and Steph Erasmus took his pipe out of his mouth and spat into the fire.
"There are some things it's not pretty for a man to see. They're too hard for him to forget. He should not see his son kill his first man. Also, he should not see his son die."
They were silent then, knowing this truth. They had not spoken of it before, because too much talk softens a man's stomach. But they knew death and understood what Steph had said. One by one their heads turned until they were all staring across the square at the gathering of youngsters beyond the fires. Dennis Peterson said something, but they couldn't catch the words, and his companions laughed.
"In order to live, a man must occasionally kill," said Waite. "But when he kills too young, he loses something. A respect for life. He makes it cheap. It's the same with a woman. A man should never have his first woman until he understands about it. Otherwise, that too becomes cheap."
"I had my first when I was 15, said Tim Hope Brown. "I can't say it made them any cheaper. In fact, I've known them to be bloody expensive."
Waite's big boom led the laughter.
"I know your old man pays you £1 a week, but what about us, Sean?" protested Dennis. "We aren't all millionaires."
"All right, then," Sean agreed. "£5 in the pool. Winner takes the lot."
£5 is reasonable, Carl opined. "But let's get the rules clear so there's no argument afterwards."
"Kills only. Woundings don't count," said Sean.
"And they have to be witnessed," insisted Fricky Van Essen. He was older than the others. His eyes were already a little bloodshot, for he had made a start on the evening's drinking.
"All right. Dead Zulus only, and a witness to each kill. The highest score takes the pool."
Sean looked around the circle of faces for their assent. Gary was hanging back on the fringe.
"Gary'll be the banker. Come on, Gary, hold out your hat."
They paid the money into Garrick's hat, and he counted it.
£2 from 8 of us. That's correct.
Hell, the winner will be able to buy his own farm."
They laughed. I've got a couple of bottles of smoke hidden in my saddlebags, Fricky said. Let's go and try them. The hands of the clock on the church tower showed 10:15. There were silver-edged clouds around the moon, and the night had cooled. Rich, meaty-smelling steam from the cooking pits drifted across the dancers. Fiddles soared, and the concertina bawled the beat. Dancers danced, and the watchers clapped in time and called encouragement to them. Someone whooped, like a Highlander in the feverish pattern of movement, in the fever of fun. Damn the dribbles of minutes with laughter. Hold the hour, lay siege against the dawn.
Where are you going, Sean?
I'll be back just now.
But where are you going?
Do you want me to tell you, Anna? Do you really want to know?
Oh, I see. Don't be long. I'll wait for you by the band.
Dance with Carl.
No, I'll wait for you, Sean. Please don't be long. We've got such a little time left.
Sean slipped through the circle of wagons. He kept in the tree shadow along the sidewalk, round the side of Pye's store and down the lane, running now, jumped the ditch and through the barbed wire fence. It was dark in the plantation and quiet, as she had said. Dead leaves rustled and a twig popped under his feet. Something ran in the darkness, scurry of small feet. Sean's stomach flopped over. Nerves, only a rabbit. He came to the hedge and searched for the hole. Missed it and turned back, found it and threw into the orchard. He stood with his back against the wall of vegetation and waited. The trees were moon-grey and black below. He could see the roof of the house beyond them. He knew she'd come, of course. He had told her to. The church clock chimed the hour, and then the single stroke of the quarter hour. Angry now, damn her. He went up through the orchard, cautiously staying in shadow. There was a light in one of the side windows. He could see it spilling out into a yellow square on the lawn. He circled the house softly. She was at the window, with the lamp behind her. Her face was dark, but lamplight lit the edges of her hair into a coppery halo. There was something of yearning in her attitude, leaning forward over the sill. He could see the outline of her shoulders through the white cloth of her gown. Sean whistled, pitching it low to reach her only, and she started at the sound. A second longer, she stared out from light into the dark, and then she shook her head, slowly and regretfully from side to side. She closed the curtains, and through them Sean saw her shadow move away. The lamp went out. Sean went back through the orchard and the plantation. He was trembling with anger. From the lane he heard the music in the square, and he quickened his pace. He turned the corner and saw the lights and movement. "Silly little fool," he said out loud. Anger still there, but something else as well. Affection, respect.
"Where have you been? I've waited nearly an hour."
Possessive Anna.
"There and back, to see how far it is."
Funny. "Sean Courtney, where have you been?"
"Do you want to dance?"
"No."
"All right, then, don't."
Carl and some of the others were standing by the cooking pits. Sean started for them.
Sean, I'm sorry."
"Penitent, Anna.
I'd love to dance, please."
They danced, jostled by other dancers, but neither of them spoke until the band stopped to wipe their brows and wet dry throats.
"I've got something for you, Sean."
"What is it?"
"Come, I'll show you."
She led him from the light among the wagons and stopped by a pile of saddles and blankets. She knelt and opened one of the blankets and stood up again with the coat in her hands.
"I made it for you. I hope you like it."
Sean took it from her. It was sheepskin, tanned and polished, stitched with love, the inside wool bleached snowy white. "It's beautiful," Sean said. He recognized the labor that had gone into it. It made him feel guilty. Gifts always made him feel guilty. "Thank you very much."
"Try it on, Sean."
Warm, snug at the waist, room to move in the shoulders, it enhanced his considerable bulk. Anna stood close to him, arranging the collar.
"You look nice in it," she said.
Smug pleasure of the giver. He kissed her, and the mood changed. She held him tight around the neck.
"Oh, Sean, I wish you weren't going."
"Let's say goodbye properly."
"Where?"
"My wagon."
"What about your parents?"
"They've gone back to the farm. Pa's coming in tomorrow morning. Gary and I are sleeping here."
"No, Sean, there are too many people. We can't."
"You don't want to?" Sean whispered. "It's a pity, because it might be the last time ever."
"What do you mean?"
She was suddenly still and small in his arms.
"I'm going away tomorrow. You know what might happen."
"No, don't talk like that. Don't even think it."
"It's true."
"No, Sean, don't. Please don't."
Sean smiled in the darkness. "So easy, so very easy. Let's go to my wagon." He took her hand.